weeknights from 6 on 2FM.
Big thanks to Emma and Graham for driving us through the afternoon. It's Wednesday, November 28th, and you're listening to Game On. Coming up between now and the music show with Beto Da Silva at 7 o'clock, David Snaid is with us of the 42. He's going to bring us all the latest soccer news. We'll also chat to Irish basketball captain Sean Flood about Ireland's must-win games against Azerbaijan and Kosovo. And in Gaelic games, it is the season to retire. Damien Lawler joins us with a weekly roundup of all the Gaelic games news. As always, if you want to have your say, you can send us a text on 51552, WhatsApp us on 087-187-9200, or we're on X at GameOn2FM. Yeah, welcome along. David Snaid is with me in studio. How are you, David?
I'm very well. I'm just glad you forgot the date rather than my name. So thank you.
I know, yeah. Yeah, could have went a lot worse. I was close. I had the 16th, which is just a week off.
Well, we're getting into that time where it's coming up to Christmas where no one has a clue what day it is or what day it isn't. So we are getting to that time of year.
Very much that time of year, all right. And it is the time of year when we talk about what's coming down the tracks for our different teams. Damien Lawler has all the Gaelic Games retirements. But when it comes to football here in Ireland, we're looking at things like how the Ireland team have got on in their last campaign or their last window. And I guess, look, one that's just came on out before we came on air is that the President's Cup, the date has been announced. So that means that on the 7th of February, Shells and Drogheda are going to face off at Tolka Park. And already we're looking forward to next season.
I know, just when you're beginning to get a little bit of withdrawal symptoms when there's been no football to go to on a Friday night, and obviously the season finishing, and then so looking forward to that now. Shells and Drogheda, fairness as well, even just Shells today have just re-signed Sean Boyd, the striker. He signed on a 1 year deal, could be wrong on that, and that's a big one for him, because he kind of shown once he was fit this season like just how important he is, and coming into his prime he's going to be someone who he needs to be fit and fired, and if Shells are going to retain the league, and that's what we're already beginning to be talking about, is, you know, who are they going to be signing, who are they getting in. They've let a few players go. Matty Smith, one of them. Shane Griffin has gone. Dean Williams has gone. Duff obviously is going to have to be, he's going to be having an improved budget. Like Derry City have obviously made their moves now with a new manager as well, and Rovers have European football. It's it's like obviously Drogheda as well, like that cup final. I really enjoyed that cup final. It's a couple of weeks gone now, but like just how well Drogheda played, and then just like the tension that was there, and then just a bit of release. It was it's been one of the better ones, I think, over the last little while.
Yeah, it's been a really entertaining season. You mentioned Derry City having a new manager, that's Tiernan Lynch, and yeah, he's coming out. He's talking a big talk, I guess. He said that his goal is to make Derry City the biggest club on the island of Ireland.
I don't think you can go into that job and try and play it down. Do you know what I mean? And also, it's probably, I don't think that's something that Rudy Higgins ever did either. You know, I think the nature of how Derry season finished. Obviously, we've just mentioned the cup final. Obviously, it was Derry City. You were on the, well, not the wrong end of that result. They were on the end of the result that was deserved. But just the way their season just really fell apart. In theory they were like a month away from winning the double, but it was at a time where they never really felt, even though at times it was in their hands, that they were actually capable of doing it. So Tiernan Lynch just coming into a club at a point, it's on its lowest ebb for the last 3 years, since pretty much Rudy Higgins came in and lifted it from towards the bottom end of the table. They are at their kind of the lowest ebb, and they do need someone to come in and get a hold of it again, because obviously they've lost some key players there, like the two McElhenney brothers, Patrick and Shane, have left, and they were also maybe coming towards that end of their career at the top level of the League of Ireland. There's a bit of a state of flux with like the goalkeeper there, Brian Maher. He'd be sought after, and there's interest across the water, possibly closer to home as well. Adam O'Reilly talks that he could possibly be going back to St. Pat's. Will Patching, who has been one of the better players in the league over the last few years, this season nowhere near his standards, he could be going back to the UK as well. So he's coming in, Tiernan Lynch, at a time where he's going to have to get a hold of things very, very quickly. And a guy was speaking to a few people this week just about him after, obviously, kind of got a bit of word at the back end of last week that obviously he was someone they were looking at. So just trying to make a few kind of calls on him to see what he was like. Obviously, I've only seen Laren play once in the flesh, and that's when they played Shamrock Rovers in the Conference League earlier, like last month. And Rovers like played them off the park. And just talking to people, it was like maybe a bit of a misjudgment from him, from Tiernan Lynch, where he wants to go toe-to-toe with Rovers. Laren have basically been, obviously, over the last couple of years, broken the stranglehold of Linfield in the Irish League by playing really attractive football, and then getting away from that a little bit and not being kind of like a team who are easy on the eye but you could always beat maybe 1-0, they kind of turn into a bit of a more robust team. That's what Tiernan Lynch was able to do at Larne, and that's what he kind of think he has to do at Derry now as well, is because he went into a club at Larne, obviously, who, if people don't know, maybe they might not be aware of it, like they were the bottom of the second tier in Irish, the Irish Football League up in Northern Ireland. Like they were amateur, like there was literally, as in, like, that's not saying they were amateur, they're just literally, that's what they were, like it was like training twice a week and stuff, and build a club up with Kenny Bruce, who obviously is a multi-millionaire local person, but made money in an online estate agency company, and just was helping to build the club up. But Tiernan Lynch was the one who obviously shared that vision, was able to drive it on the football side, and there's quite a lot of parallels with Derry now, because obviously you've got Philip O'Doherty, who only sold his company not long ago for upwards of £1.1 billion, and obviously he is like bankrolling Derry City, and you kind of feel as if so much groundwork and so much good work had been done by Rory Higgins, and he just couldn't get over the line, and you feel maybe, well, is the next person coming in going to have to build on those foundations, which I think he will, Tiernan Lynch, and he already has that kind of track record as well, so I think that's why he could be a kind of a perfect appointment.
Okay, well, he was out speaking to the media today. Let's hear from Derry City's new manager Kieran Lynch speaking to the BBC.
In my opinion, Derry City has the potential to be the biggest club on the island of Ireland, and that's a prospect that was just too difficult to turn down.
People will look and see you were in a very comfortable position. You were very successful with Larne. You had built the structure of a club. You had taken them from Championship. You have 5 Grundy Andron Shields. You have 2 league titles. You've taken them to Europe. No other manager has done that. Why leave? Why take this challenge? Is it something to take you to the next level?
Not thinking about the next level. No, definitely not. I had an opportunity to take a job in the Scottish Premiership in October, and I turned it down. But when Derry City came calling, I didn't need to think twice. And that's probably shows you the potential that I think that lies in this football club and lies in this city. And I've came to watch a number of games of Derry over the last couple of years. It was always something that was very special. It was always something that I thought that if the opportunity ever came, I would like a crack at it.
How big of a challenge do you see it being? Because there hasn't been a league title here in not far short of 30 years.
Again, my job's not really to talk about league titles. I'm not going to stand at any occasion and make false promises to the supporters here. The only one guarantee that I'll give the supporters and the fans and everybody connected to the football club is it's nothing but hard work. And I'll do everything in my powers to try and put foundations here in place that'll hopefully give this club success.
But from a personal ambition, no manager has ever won titles north and south. This could put you on a pedestal above the likes of previous managers here at Brandywell, like Roy Coyle, who was a huge success in the Irish League.
Again, my job's to get in here today and get around Derry City, get around Derry City fans, try and show them, help them, explain to them what it is they would like to do, and if that works enough to deliver a league title, that's definitely what our objective would be. That's definitely something that we would love to do for the club and, as I say, for the fans, but time will tell.
Tiernan Lynch, the new Derry City manager, speaking to the BBC today. David Sinead of the 42 is with me in studio. It's a pressurised job, David, isn't it?
Yeah, like I was up there last game of the season, obviously when Shelbourne kind of clinched the league, and even though it was the cup final coming, like you could just sense even just some of the disappointment that was still there because of the manner of how they hadn't kind of gotten over the line and maybe not so much challenge for the league because they were up to a point. And it just comes from a little bit like just expectation. It's up there. It's just obviously it's such a cliche, but it is so true. It's like it's a football mad sea where like even like the journalists, it's like it's almost like a bit of a kind of like a running joke where, you know, when Derry City are playing in Dublin, you're covering one of their games, you know, you have to get to the ground about an hour earlier than usual because like there's so much more media even going. Like there is so much like focus on the club, and obviously it is a club that is building. Like obviously Tiernan Lynch kind of mentioned it there in that interview. obviously doesn't understand going up. Like, they are trying to put more infrastructure in place and build a club up rather than just having this maybe focus, as maybe some people might have said over the last while, that has just purely been on that first team. And I think even with Tiernan Lynch, and what it could be even exciting from the league, just from speaking to people who have worked with him, is just like, obviously there's him and his brother Seamus, so it is a bit of a double act, a bit of like, kind of, we kind of said it in a piece of Different 42, it's like torn up a bit of brotherly love when you've been heartbroken after how the season has gone. Do you know what I mean? And like, I think the dynamic of how they work, it was like, what was it, Roy Keane was saying, and Martin O'Neill, wasn't there like bad cop and bad cop? It was like Seamus Lynch in the training ground, he's like so stern and so serious, and they're both there in terms of how they want to like coach and get the point across. And like, for players, like, there's no messing at all. Mm-hmm. Like, you know exactly what your jobs are going to be. There was even little things, and this is probably like for footballers it's such a little, for anyone you're probably thinking, well, it's normal, like this is basic, but like, he does his thing where you like work in like really intense six week blocks on certain tactical stuff, and then if he feels, well, the players really put it in for that time, he'll like give them 4 days off in a row, so just go and do stuff with friends or with family and all, and like stuff like that. When you're a footballer, you're going to get time off, but like that actually, like, that can win players over a little bit, when you know actually like little things like that, especially when you can see the kind of the merits of it. And it's one of those things where, and this isn't to kind of denigrate any of the work that Rudy Higgins has done, or it's a sense that maybe that's what was lacking, but like with Larne, the players there that I've spoken to about when you work with them, is you get the tricky moments in the season and you kind of feel, well, you can remember all the work that has been done to certain points, and you don't feel as if, well, anything's been left a chance, or anything that hasn't actually, basically no corners have been cut. And I don't think that is something that happened with Rudy Higgins. I just do think maybe over the course of this season, with the cycle of where the team was at, it was just the team that was maybe coming over the hill a little bit. We kind of seen that way with maybe some of the departures. So I think we've started talking about with the draw today and Shell's game, and obviously some of the transfers that are going to be happening. That's the next thing now that he's going to have to get the show on the road with, is like, first of all, convincing some of the players who are there who could potentially live to hang around. That's going to be a big thing. That's going to be important. That's going to get some fans on side. But then also being able to entice other players to the club, because obviously their rivals have already got ahead of them, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And we're already looking forward to the start of the new season, so no doubt they will be as well, and there'll be lots of plans. Back to the Ireland setup, though, because we do have that World Cup qualifying draw for the UEFA section on December 13th. Mm. Lots of permutations with this, so I'm going to hand it over to you to break it down for us, because it's always complex.
No pressure.
None whatsoever.
Now, obviously, this is something where obviously I was looking at this online today and just going through it, and it's not actually as complex as you might think.
Of course.
Which is good. So Ireland are going to be in a four-team group for the World Cup draw. Now, before we get to that, obviously there is going to be a Nations League draw on Friday for the playoff, but that has actually nothing to do with the World Cup season. The interesting thing that I find with this draw, what's going to be, is obviously the fact that now Ireland are going to be in a four-team group, which is a good thing, because if we had to be in, say, one of the five-team groups and then having that window in around the June time, that could have been, that's been like to Ireland's detriment over the last while, where we've had some brutal results where just players just aren't ready to go at that part of the season. Now, as we've seen, like, that's not to say that come September, October, November of next year, when the draw is made, when the actual groups is taking place, that's going to be any better. But it just, well, for one thing, hopefully the memory of what happened in Wembley is going to be so far from their minds, and we've gotten through a playoff in the Nations League where there's a bit of positivity going into that. But it also means for Hamer Hall-Grimson, he's going to have that June window. Not sure what the plan will be. Will it be a couple of games? Will it be one game? Because there's obviously just issue with the season tickets and stuff. And then having a training camp, like, that's going to be an important thing for him, at least in that June window leading into this World Cup group. So, like, in terms of who Ireland can actually get, like, there are like a lot of teams that, like, they're going to be in pot three. So if you're looking at, say, pot one, you're going to have anyone from like Spain. I know you're already
starting to get deflated when you say Spain.
You start listing the teams, but this is the thing at this point. Like, obviously, anyone from pot one, you're kind of thinking, we've seen what happened with England. You're like you might think, oh, well, Austria, but then you see how Austria fared at the Euros and what's been the kind of the form that they're in and what they're actually capable of. You're like, I actually wouldn't fancy them at all, you know. Obviously, then pot two could be like, say, this is where you might, you look at it like Ukraine, Turkey, Hungary, Serbia, Greece, Slovakia. Slovakia also are the team who Ireland could get on Friday in the Nations League playoff, the relegation draw. It's just like, you're looking at it there and it's just, you're going through those teams and you're, normally what are you thinking? You'd be like, oh, I'd fancy a cut off them, or if we got them. Because of the nature of where Ireland are at this moment in time, and even with the Nations League campaign where we obviously got home and away wins against Finland, you don't really fancy Ireland to be able to put it up to a team who are
like Slovakia.
Yeah, do you know what I mean? Like, well, like, if you go back to the playoff in what, 2020, Steve, well, it was obviously just the one-off game. Stephen Kenny's, wasn't his first game in charge, essentially. Well, the competitive game, and that they came very close to even winning that, do you know what I mean? And then, like, you see how, what happened there. That's only 4 years ago, but then you look at what's happened in the time since. And then obviously we're going to be in pot three, is it pot four? And then even there, you're just like, this is like, I don't know if this is just me being really kind of just
realistic.
Negative or realistic. It's just because, I'll be honest, you're kind of thinking, if you're, I'm just going off the Nations League campaign, for, like, you look at it, well, you know, it was positive that Ireland were able to go away to Finland and Helsinki and being there covering that game and seeing them coming from a goal behind, playing reasonably well in that second half especially, and then obviously in the game in Dublin, beating a team who are ranked below Ireland, you're like, well, that's actually a positive that they can actually go. But at no point in those games were you thinking, this is Ireland actually stamping their authority on this game. Like, they were, there is no doubt about it, they were fortunate in both games to win them. So obviously Caoimhín Kelleher had to save a penalty in the most recent game. So, like, and obviously then what happened in Wembley and just the nature of that collapse, it almost feels like we're finding out so much about this Ireland team, but some of it doesn't really fill you with confidence in terms of finding out different ways of actually losing games. Like, I remember, like, just from the weekend when I was covering the game and just writing about how, like, yeah, there was like 50 minutes of like promise and optimism for how this team actually had set up and looked to frustrate England, but then one misplaced pass from Evan Ferguson, one absolutely world-class pass from Harry Kane that splits open the defence. Liam Scales has a rush of blood to the head, gets sent off for a second yellow, having made a stupid decision earlier to try and stop a quick free kick near England's own penalty box. And then, obviously, they just collapse. And you're just like, you're kind of feeling like at this point, like, I think I'm not sure who it was after the game, we're just talking about, well, are this team actually going to mature as a group of players? Because it's something that Hill Grimson has been talking about, you know, wanting to have that consistency of selection. But he's, in the games he's been in charge of, he's, I think he's used like 31 players, and that's something like he's not a novice international manager. He was talking and you're kind of thinking, you're never going to get that consistency of selection in international football. Like, and it goes back to the point I said about, by the time the World Cup draw comes around in, oh sorry, not the draw, obviously the draw is next month, but the time the actual qualifiers come around, it's nearly in 12 months time. Do you know what I mean? Like, you would hope the likes of Andrew Morden, who's been playing well at Stoke in a slightly different position, might actually have kicked on in his career and could be providing a different impetus in midfield for Ireland. At the moment, the picture looks very bleak. I don't think anybody who has been like involved in watching the Nations League campaign could think any differently. But you just hope that by the time that game comes around, oh, that qualifier group comes around, and the fact that it is the four-team group, that maybe the tide has began to turn, and that's only going to be torn by players improving at club level and doing more at club level and actually like developing there and actually having a bit more confidence there and being able to take it in with Ireland, because like, especially that last window in England, like, they're going to, it's 4 months now until that playoff in March. I can think it's going to be on the floor.
Do we need to stay in Group B?
Yeah, no, definitely. Just in terms of, like, I know people say, well, Even just for in terms of seasons and stuff, for possibly getting into being a host of, say, Euro 2028, but actually getting one of the spots, it's going to go off the Nations League season. So if Ireland drop down, obviously Northern Ireland are flying. Like, obviously, I know, like, Case and Partick, but they're still going to be one of the co-hosts there. Like, they're flying. Scotland, really impressive. Wales,
like, really
impressive. So this thing of, maybe it's not a bad thing if Ireland drop down and play sides of a lower ilk a little bit and maybe regain confidence. You have to stay at the highest level you can and improve that way. Do you know what I mean? And like, let's be honest, in League B, in Greece, and even there, like, when I was covering that game in Athens, like, in that first half, it was not for Caoimhín Kelleher. Like, Greece are 3-0 up easily in that game. It's like, it wouldn't have been, the England defeat wouldn't have been the only absolute like hockey score that was there, you know what I mean? So you have to stay at that level just to be able to improve. I don't even see if when because the confidence is that short, how dropping down, like how much confidence they'll actually get from playing against sides, and then all it takes is a couple of, especially at the very start, of a couple of bad results, and then you're like, well, then you're really worrying, and you think, oh well, what do we need to do without the league? But that's not even worth talking about. But I just think, just even with the World Cup, and so it is so far away, and it's basically, it is what Hal Grimson is aiming for now. He said it, even, I don't think it was in his first press conference, it might have been after, even just around the first window, after the first England and Greece defeats back in September, where he was talking about this is planning towards the World Cup. When Matt Doherty was kind of jesting out of the squad, he was like, I'm looking, building towards the World Cup. So the fact that June bit of window time to actually maybe have a look at lads who hopefully the back end of the season, Evan Ferguson, fingers crossed, will have played more games as well by that point. It's just, until that point, there's so many variables, it's so far away, and they just the hope is that some of these players actually do kind of progress at club level, because it is going to be the only thing that's going to save Ireland.
Okay, on that not so cheery note, David Snaith, thank you so much.
Probably doesn't help that I have a really bad like kind of throat here, so like even when I'm saying it probably sounds even more depressing.
Thank you very much for coming into studio. We're going to take a quick break, but stay with us though. We're going to be talking Gaelic Games and basketball after. Now it's time to talk Gaelic Games. I'm delighted to say that Damian Lawler joins me now on the line. Damian, it's pretty seismic week really when you think about it, just the big names that we're not going to be seeing, and we have to really start with Brian Fenton, and more so Damien, what are the Dubs going to do without him?
I don't know what they're going to do without him, and I Marie, can you remember last week's show we probably chatted about it, and I think we name checked Brian, and we name checked a few more, like the Dublin supporters out there will now be hoping that after Cool is run, whenever that ends, that Mick Fitzsimons won't go. They'll be hoping that Jack McCaffrey and Paul Mannion won't go. Those guys have had spells, maybe taking time out previously. They would have been hoping up to this week that Brian Fenton might just take a year out but will come back. But he's gone now. And Dublin supporters will also be hoping that John Small or Paddy Small will stick around. So there's lots of question marks. And then you go to the goalkeeper. Will Stephen Cluxton stick around, or will he stick around in a coaching capacity? And maybe the two younger sub-goalkeepers get a run through into the team, because they're both very good as well. So certainly, would I be confident in putting a full stop after Brian Fenton's retirement for this Dublin setup? I certainly would not. And I think we alluded to that last week as well. And I think the next few weeks can be very interesting from that point of view. But regardless of what happens in players like Brian Howard, Conor Callaghan, Cormac Costlow, Owen Merchant, there's plenty of good young talent in that Dublin team. I'm led to believe that Davy Byrne, who's got a plethora of All-Ireland medals from Naomh Olaf's, he's back in the squad again. I'm also told that there's 30-35 new players in the training camp at the moment. So clearly, Marie, there is a changing of the guard. How many of those players see actual game time in the next couple of years will be interesting, but I'd imagine the door will be left open for a lot of them to be road tested. And don't forget too, Marie, you've got players like Keane Murphy and Lorcan O'Dell, who probably weren't fully fit towards the tail end of Dublin's campaign last year. So to answer your question, Dublin footballers, no matter what happens from here to Christmas, are going to be left with some serious footballers in their ranks, but they've lost some serious once in a generational talent, effectively. You're taking James McCarthy and you're taking Brian Fenton out of that centre spine. Well, there's no team in history could cope with that, you know. So it remains to be seen what the end of the year brings yet. But I don't think we're finished yet in terms of Dublin retirements, Marie.
Of all the years not to have pre-season competitions, because I would love to see what the Dublin team looks like in a pre-season environment, but it'll be behind closed doors friendlies, Damien, will it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, like, internally, there could be a bit of training going on internally, training matches, if that's allowed with inter-county teams back. I think as soon as it is allowed, that'll be the scene with the Dublin setup. There'll be internal trials. And again, look, you're going to be asking questions about Stephen Cluxton. Will he come back as a goalkeeper or will he come back in a coaching capacity? And I think that it'll be fascinating. But again, if he walks on, he's a generational goalkeeper, you know, potentially the best goalkeeper Gaelic football's ever seen. The harsh reality too is life moves on fast, and you've got two good goalkeepers there waiting to stake their place, stake their claim for a place too. But certainly, if you're thinking about joining up with the Dublin football team, and you're a rookie and you're not road tested, you have a much better opportunity to get game time now, I would imagine, than at any stage over the past decade.
But even, Damien, the other counties in Leinster, if we were just to focus on Leinster, because there'll be lots of counties there that, for them, success would be winning a Leinster title. And there's still a lot of value in provincial success to so many counties. It's wide open now, isn't it?
It is to an extent, Marie. I still feel that, like, you could have Dublin's third choice team and they would give some counties, they would beat some counties. I think for the likes of Louth, there's a serious scope now to try and push and win a Leinster title. You know, they gave a really good account of themselves last year, this year's final, not so much last year, but really and truly, they're middle third, and the likes of Craig Lennon behind them, you know, they really, if they can push on from this year, they have a chance of breaking the Dublin's dominance in Leinster. So other teams have a better chance, Marie, but Dublin will still be right up there in terms of winning a Leinster title. Don't forget too that counties like Kildare and Meath have new managers. Mm-hmm. So how quickly can they get off the mark and get up to a level where they can compete with whatever team Dublin have out next year? But I think history will show us there in the last 15 years or so, the underage talent may not be steaming through in the last few seasons like it once was, but there is still the bones of a very formidable Dublin structure there. And, you know, I think that there's enough players there to go ahead, look at winning a provincial title again and going all the way in the All-Ireland series. It's just, it'll be a younger generation leading the charge now.
Ah, Damien, you were ruining it there for me. I thought we were going to have a wide open Leinster championship, but go the way of the dogs again.
Forgive my cynicism. Like, there's a lot of counties. I put it like this to you. There's a lot of counties in Leinster have a lot of work to do to leap up the ladder. But look, there'll be excitement. There's obviously Mickey Hart's in Offaly. Brian Flanagan will put in his structures into Kildare. Robbie Brennan has come off a great campaign with Crokes. He'll get Meath going again. And I suppose if you look around there, Westmeath and Louth will feel that they have a chance really to catch Dublin. They will be the two right away that you'd be thinking would be in line to catch Dublin. So look, it is way more open than it was. I'll give you that much, Marie.
Yeah, for sure. Look, and anyone that's joining the Dublin footballers, you mentioned some of the young players coming through, but the likes of Owen O'Donnell now, he becomes a very important player, Damien.
Owen O'Donnell becomes a very important player. You know, probably from a Dublin hurling point of view, is a loss. Former captain, you know, a bit of an iconic talismanic player for that team. You know, the word came back then a few weeks ago that he was going to make his switch. He made a switch a few years ago to Marie, but the Dublin hurlers were out of contention at that stage, and I think it made sense for him to try it. But like, he did make a match day squad within a galaxy of talent, so that has to stand to him. And now some names have moved out, potentially some more names moving out as well. So Owen O'Donnell probably has to back himself now. Like we spoke on the show previously, it's probably now or never for Owen O'Donnell in regards to making the switch. And this next year coming is probably as good as a chance as any for him to get game time and put down a stake for his place as well.
Yeah, well, you caught up with Niall Corcoran ahead of this weekend's Gaelic Games coaching conference that's going to be held in Croke Park, focusing on the future of GAA coaching. But first of all, you started by asking him about Owen O'Donnell. Let's hear it.
Owen is a fantastic player and will be a huge loss to Dublin Hurling, Damien. At the same time, you have a new management team in there. They're trying to look for new players. I know they're scouting at the county at the moment with trials and all that. And I think you have to just work with the players you have. And there's enough good players there to make progress with Dublin in the long term. And I think when you look at kind of some of the newer guys that are introduced in 2024 in the Mayhall, I think there's a lot to build on there. And I think Neil, Donal and David just have to move on now and kind of look at what's there and try and develop those young players into a very, very competitive group.
Niall, what a management team as well in terms of Dublin Blue Bloods. Like, a lot of speculation maybe who'd replace Micheál Donoghue. We might deal with that first of all. I suppose Micheál Donoghue's gone to Galway now. He was making progress with Dublin, wasn't he? Like, you could see the patterns of play emerging every game.
Absolutely, and what people forget is Micheál had to deal with a huge amount of turnover players, a lot of players that stepped away or retired. And what Micheál's done, he's introduced a lot of young blood and new players to the squad. So, and you can see the progress even this year, getting to a Leinster final, their performance against Galway in Pearse Stadium. I was at the Parnell Park game against Kilkenny, and like some really good green shoots there in terms of players. So I think when you look at the squad there now and the management team with Neil and David Curtin and Donal, I think the three guys know Dublin Hurling inside out. And having played with David, and I think he's phenomenal experience and at that level. So I think he in particular will add a lot to that.
Can I ask you about that? The rivalry that's there between the clubs, between Kilmacud Crokes, between Ballyboden and St Enda's, and the other clubs as well. And for the three stalwarts to come together, maybe of Dublin Hurling as a unit, but that does say a lot about the respect that they have for each other, but maybe the vision that they have for the county hurling team too.
Yeah, definitely. You know, you look at Nafina, Ballyboden and Kilmacud, you know, they're three very, very strong clubs, and I suppose most recently in the hurling side, Nafina and Crokes have become strong rivalries. When I came to Dublin first, you know, from a hurling perspective, Ballyboden were kingpins, and David Curtin was a huge part of that. So I think you're right, it does show that they have an appetite to see Dublin Hurling progress, and it shows that you can remove club loyalties and come together as a group to really build something special. And I think that's what Dublin Hurling needs, and I think it has the raw material there, but it needs the expertise and experience, and I think there's three good guys in there to lead that on.
Just in terms of what they are then, like, they're good managers, but they're great coaches as well. Coaching is probably your background too, Niall. We probably move ahead to this weekend, big coaching conference in Croke Park, and you're one of the keynote speakers. Just from a coaching perspective in general, are we in a healthy place in GAA? Like, say, take the respective codes. A lot of people might argue that in football, certainly there's maybe elements of negative coaching coming in general. That might change with the new Football Review Committee proposals. But in coaching circles, in 2025, as we move into a new year, is the standard quite high? Is it higher than ever before? Is the approach good enough?
It's certain standards have certainly been raised, and I think there's a number of factors for that. You look at first of all, players are more educated, so players now are more aware of what other sports are doing. They're in college with their peers and they're aware of what other counties are doing, so that does put a certain amount of pressure back on coaches to up their game. I think field coaches now are more educated in terms of what coaching should look like. You see the example of the GAA where we have our new ICGG course, our World War I courses, and I think we're pushing more for qualified coaches to be involved in our games. I think that's really, really important. Yes, there's still gaps, and I think for me, we still need to be accountable as coaches and as volunteers. It's great to be involved with an under-7 or under-8 team as a volunteer, but you still need to be able to know how to respect children, how to respect peers, how to respect referees, and how to develop players properly. So I think while we're moving in the right direction, I think from as we go further down the pipeline and into the grassroots, we still do need to push that on further.
Do you find then that maybe as players go along the ladder of their development, that it's better for a uniform message along the pathway to come from coaches rather than individual opinions every second or third year?
Yeah, like when you look at a kind of the player pathway, and you look at kind of different elements that need to be developed within that player, I think there should be a consistency. And I think when you look at I'll just take the example of Crokes, for example, and I think when you look at what retains coaches and develops players, I think first of all it's the community piece. It's the culture that's developed within the club. What does that look like? Is it positive? Is it negative? What connects coaches? And as we're speaking to a number of coaches involved in Crokes, and you know why they put so much time into the club, and it's not because of a Paul Mannion or a Fergal Whiteley playing. It's because they've come into a community, they feel welcome, They might not have grew up in that community and they've made friends in that community. And these are parents who are now getting involved in coaching. In terms of the consistent message, I think it's about kind of how you structure your age group and structure your team. And what message does the club want to give to the parents? And what message do the parents want to give to the players? And I think that's definitely a top-down approach and also a bottom-up approach. My influence in that can be in the sense of we get new parents into a club nursery and I've an opportunity then to influence that culture in terms of what we're trying to, what message we're trying to give, and also what that looks like in terms of player development. So yeah, I think that uniformity becomes very, very important.
There's a lot of talk out there about pressure on referees and maybe demands on players as well. Nobody really talks about maybe the demands and pressures on coaches, because in some cases where there's maybe mileage expenses or reimbursement involved, there's little sympathy. But if you're a volunteer coach, which 90% of people are at underage certainly, and you're racing back from work to structure a session and the session's not going well and the results aren't going well, just what do you see in your role and from your experience, the pressures that are on coaches at the minute?
Yeah, they're very real. As you outlined, you have people trying to get out of town to get to Ballycorus to a 6 o'clock training session or try to get somewhere to a team. And what I've learned is that for me, as somebody professional working in the GA, I need to meet them where they're at, not the other way around. So what does that look like? It looks like providing resources, providing coach support, and breaking down simply to for a parent to say, well, what does a simple session look like for a group of 8-year-olds? And we have lots of resources in the GAA, but it's my job to translate that. Yeah. And look at and just go and say, here's what you do tonight. We're an association built on the volunteers, and we have to support them in that way. So I think there is a huge demand on volunteers, particularly as life gets more busy. Both parents are working. You have your carting children from to and fro to school. They're getting involved in more and more sports. So the time demands and pressures are huge. And one thing that we can't forget is that parents need a break. So one of the things that I feel are important is that come the likes of November, December, that we just give parents a break from coaching and we take a switch off. So we come back in the new year refreshed and revitalised and have an appetite for coaching.
That was going to be my last question to you. It never ends. It just never stops. And I suppose because the bar has gone so high across all levels of the association, from inter-county right down to underage, even down to look how competitive FAIL is, yeah. And if we're being honest about it, beneath that again, everybody wants their team to give the best account of themselves possible. And that doesn't necessarily mean always training, but a lot of people feel it does. Where does the balance lie, you know, then, between getting your pre-season work done, getting your players up to a certain standard, but also keeping players playing and keeping people maybe enjoying the sport too, because maybe not everybody's meeting the balance?
It's a great question, and I think we have to be player-centric on this. Take, for example, if you're over in under 15 or 16 team, you've players playing multiple sports, they're in school playing, and you have coaches who wants what's best for those players. Maybe they want to win a championship, but there's lots of factors around that. First of all, you have to really plan your season out properly. What does a pre-season look like? What does age appropriate training look like for those players? When can I take gaps from my players to have downtime? When can I take gaps from my parents to have downtime? And also not be afraid to take those gaps, because if we're doing our jobs right as coaches, well, we shouldn't be afraid of other sports taking our players. We should let them play those sports and embrace that multi-sport development. And if they're enjoying our sport, if they're having fun, if they're improving, they're going to come back. So I think we have to be more confident in our ability to coach, and as a GA and association, provide that support for those coaches to develop those skills. And I think that's what's really important for me, that we do take those breaks and we do support those players and make sure that they fulfil their potential at the end of that pathway. If that's playing Junior D hurling or inter-county football, so be it. Like, but it's about staying with the association in the longer term.
So Damien, before we move on to the club championship stories that are doing the rounds as well, just the coaching conference at the weekend, how important is that? Just because, I guess, look, in a way it's nearly an industry, Damien, because there's so many coaches now and people want to learn all of the time and want to improve their coaching acumen.
I think we're all relentless in that regard. I think that brings his own problems to Murray. And actually, in Niall's interview, I spoke to Niall maybe for up to 15 minutes. And as the interview went on, we discussed the challenges that were facing coaches. And I suppose when to start the competitive aspect versus developmental is one challenge. And people in continental Europe do it differently than we do. Like under 18 is considered developmental in Belgium, for example, and their football team rose up the ranks. But try telling anybody in Ireland that you're going to go to 18 without competition and you'll be doing really, really well. Secondly, then, with the nature of the GEA specifically, Marie, the season never ends. And I don't know if you can see it in your house, but coach burnout is becoming more and more a factor all over the country. You might get 4 weeks off, you might get six. Very, very few would get more than 2 months off. And you are, you know, as Niall was saying, you're racing from work, you're trying to get your training schedule drawn up. If you're a lead mentor these days, no matter what team you're over, there's a ton of organisation and logistics to be done before you even get on the field. And I suppose back maybe when I was younger, you maybe had a knockout championship, you might have trained very, very seldom compared to what you do now. So I think Niall was also saying that coach burnout, not just player burnout, and this is a new enough one on me, but I can understand exactly where he's coming from. That's going to be one of the key things that they address on Saturday. And there's, I think there's 500 or 600 delegates going to that coaching conference, and there's an array of speakers everywhere. So they'll learn an awful lot from that.
Yeah, definitely, Damien. And just before we finish up, it's club championship time, and there's always some really captivating stories.
None more so than young Oisín Ó'Donoghue, who scored an own point for Cashel in last week's Munster Intermediate semi-final, I think it was, Marie. And just after half time, you know, it forgot what the ends had been changed and shot a point into the wrong goal. But in fairness to Oisín, in the 46th minute then, buried a goal and Cashel got through that game by 4 points. And then it brought me to a dare in Limerick. Sorry, a hand in Limerick, whereby half the Munster rugby team teamed up with the Ahan junior footballers to have, did you see that? You
had
Tommy O'Donnell, you had Sean Cronin, and you had another player there as well. Was it Tommy O'Donnell, Sean Cronin, and another former Munster player joined up there? But you also had Dan Morrissey and Tom Morrissey in the ranks as well. So imagine the poor Camogue Rovers team going out to play junior football and seeing these giants there beside them as well. So that was an interesting story as well. And I guess then another result that caught my eye, Marie, was up at the Sligo Champions, Culleira Strandhill beating Ballina in the Connacht Championship on penalties, 5-4 day one. And Niall Murphy putting a lot of it down to the fact that there was such soccer presence in the squad. Yeah. A lot of the players had played soccer at club level. And look, at soccer would be very, very prominent in Sligo anyway. But just interesting to see that you are drawing from other sports there too to get you your club championship story. So you have a nice mix there too. And for the life of me, I can't think of the third rugby player who was on that Ahan team. But it's like a team of Galacticos coming out to play against you, Marie. And it's it's what the club is all about too. I always maintain the best stories lie within the club scene anyway. The best human interest stories by far.
Yeah, well, I agree with you on that one. Damien Lawler, I will chat to you next week. Thank you so much, as always, for this evening, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, Marie.
Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back. My dad has texted me in to tell me that Ian Keatley was indeed the third rugby player that was lining out in that group of Galacticos over the weekend. Now we're turning our attention to basketball. And tomorrow, Ireland have a FIBA World Cup pre-qualifier game against Azerbaijan. And then on Sunday, they take on Kosovo. I'm delighted to say that Ireland captain Sean Flood joins me now on the line. Sean, it's going to be a really big couple of days for the Ireland team, for your team. But how big is the challenge?
Yeah, it's exciting times for us. Obviously, two must-win games at home. And that's definitely what it is. It's going to be a challenge. So we played Kosovo back in February. Out in Kosovo, it was a tough game. I think we ended up losing the game by 8. And haven't yet played Azerbaijan, but we've obviously watched some video on them. And they picked up a win over Kosovo in the last window. So we know it'll be a tough challenge, but we see it as a huge opportunity for us. We also think that our squad is probably a little bit stronger now coming into this the national window than it was in February. So it's definitely a challenge, but one we definitely feel we're up for.
So break it down for us. You say must win. What does that mean?
Basically, in order to progress in the competition, we'll practically have to win both these games to give ourselves a chance heading into the February window 2025. Right now, we're our own two in the group, and both Kosovo and Azerbaijan are 1-1, and Switzerland are top of the group at 2-0. So it's really kind of do or die time now, where we need to come out with two wins in this window.
How beneficial is it to have these two must-win games at home, then both on TG Car as well?
Yeah, it's great. Like, I mean, if you're in a situation where you're told you have to win two games, there's no better place than to have to win them at home. And by having a crowd behind us here in the National Basketball Arena, it would be fantastic. And then obviously having TG Car on board as broadcasting partners is huge for the game, in order for the game to grow and kind of get more eyes, more visibility towards our sport.
So you were quite competitive against Kosovo away from home. It wasn't the result that you wanted, but what would you take away from that game and take into these two games?
It's known that we can play and compete at that level. I think we started the game maybe a little bit slow. They came out, they were quite physical and kind of weren't necessarily used to the level of play and the level of physicality. The Kosovo League would be a lot more physical than the Super League here in Ireland, where most of our guys are playing. So it's just kind of taking a second to get used to the level. And I think once we did, we were more than comfortable. And then obviously, as I said, we've added a few pieces for different reasons. People being available now who've graduated college, and then John Cowell returning from a very brief retirement. So we think we're a lot stronger going into this window. And we definitely think it's a good opportunity for us.
So you're quite familiar with Kosovo. Azerbaijan is up first tomorrow evening at 5 o'clock. What are you expecting from them?
So we watched a good bit of tape on them there the last couple of days. And obviously we know their American Jordan Davis is very talented. He's playing the top league in Spain and has had a quite successful career to date in Europe. So he'll be kind of high on the priority list in the scouting report. And then we've seen kind of some of their local players. They've got some good size and good ability to shoot the ball from three. So it'll definitely just kind of be honing in on important scouts and then sticking to game plans that Mark Puff and Fulty have put together. And I think small details will be important in a game like that.
You mentioned Mark and Mark Keenan there. He's the head coach, and he's been talking about how excited he was to get you all together, to get you at home and to be able to work together. What kind of things have you been working on?
We've actually spent a lot of time on ourselves and just kind of understanding that, like, if we do what we're supposed to do, we probably have the opportunity to be successful. So we've actually had a really good vibe in camp. We all got together on Monday, and like people returning from different countries and their clubs and stuff like that. So we got together on Monday and I've just kind of had a couple of meetings. We've had a good few on-court sessions and then just kind of spend time together. Mark has made it kind of a priority that we do spend a lot of time together in the hotel, different things like that we can do. We've a unique situation where we do have the both games at home, where we can spend the whole week in camp together. Usually you're playing a home game and an away game, so you don't necessarily have the opportunity to just stay in one place. So we've been lucky enough, and Mark has preached the importance of spending time together this week and kind of gelling as a unit.
And in terms of just getting the first win, that first game against Azerbaijan before you go and face Kosovo, how important is it to have success in that first game?
Yeah, I mean, it's hugely important. We keep talking about how we need to win two games, but we can't win two games without winning the first one first. So, I think everyone's kind of laser-focused and locked in on beating Azerbaijan. There's not been any mention of Kosovo on Sunday. So we've really just kind of honed in on the task at hand tomorrow and understand the importance of winning tomorrow to set ourselves up with the chance to make it 2-0 for the window on Sunday.
And then just yourself, Sean, am I right? You're in London with the London Lions and things are going well despite a concussion that kept you out for a few weeks.
Yeah, so I was delighted to sign with London this year. Obviously, London is probably the past couple of years has been one of the fastest growing basketball teams in Europe, and they've had great success at the European level. Took a step back this year for different financial issues that they had with ownership and stuff last year, but the standards of the club and everything has remained extremely high and very motivated. And then, to be so close to home is great too.
Yeah, it must be, Sean, because you've been around quite a few countries, haven't you?
Yeah, I've played in Germany, I've played in Cyprus, I've played in Austria, played in the Netherlands last year, and that's obviously all after spending 4 years over in America in college. So to be able to be close to home and playing at such a high level with such high professionalism, coaching staff, players is great, and honestly it's something that I've been extremely lucky with.
And when you come back home after being away and experienced so many different environments, do you feel that Irish basketball is getting stronger domestically?
Yeah, you can definitely see that it is getting stronger. There's a lot more kids participating. I think part of that is the fact that basketball is becoming more visible, not only here in Ireland, but also kind of across the world. The NBA is, it's like it's kind of become a cool thing. Basketball players in the States are cool, and that kind of outreach, as cringy as that might sound, that outreach is coming from Instagram, TikTok, all the different social media stuff like that. So kind of kids are seeing that, yeah, okay, you know what, basketball is actually a pretty fun sport, and it's a really engaging sport as well. Like, for anyone who hasn't seen basketball, like it's something that's constant, just constant action. It's not kind of like a football or a rugby where, obviously, I'm big fans of both, but it's understandable if someone turns around to me and says I'm not a fan, because obviously it's a slow game. But if someone was to turn around to me and say they're not really a fan of basketball or even the likes of hurling, where there's just always action, it doesn't necessarily make a whole lot of sense to me, because it's just such an enjoyable watch. There's always scoring, there's always action, there's always something happening. So it's obviously such a high tempo game too.
And it's indoors, Sean, as well, and a very cold evening.
That was a huge factor for me growing up, when I had the opportunity to be playing football or basketball on cold Saturday mornings. It was a lot easier to go to a basketball gym than to go out and stand on the side or be playing on a football pitch in the cold and the rain. So, yeah, I mean, hopefully the more we can get, the more kids we can get playing basketball from a young age, the higher level that the leagues here will be. And then obviously in turn, the national teams will continue to grow. And I think Basketball Ireland have done a fantastic job over the last number of years and doing their best to provide what we need and to have that level of professionalism. Obviously there's room to grow, but with John Fien and stuff over the last number of years, we've really kind of taken a step forward. And then a big thing for us coming into this window was that they were able to secure the deal with Nike, so to be able to have Nike gear and stuff like that is huge. And obviously there's a huge level of comfort when you're comfortable in the gear that you're wearing.
Yeah, for sure. I didn't realise you'd signed a deal with Nike. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, no, it is. It's good. They've looked after us now this window, in fairness to them. So it's good. Credit where credit is due. A lot of people on social media and stuff like that will give Basketball Ireland a hard time and stuff like that. So any chance we can get to say they've done a good job, it has to be said.
Great. Well, you have your own job to do over the next few days, starting with Azerbaijan and then Kosovo. So best of luck in those. We'll be following it for sure. Thanks a million, Sean.
No problem at all. Really appreciate it.
And we'll have live updates on that game tomorrow from the National Basketball Arena with Greg Allen. So do tune in for that. And that is it, though, from us this evening. Bella De Silva and the New Music Show are up next.